Celebrities and other people of note are all people, just like you and me. But we already know that, sir, Sade said. I mean, what else would they be? I'd been wondering that myself. When we think of great explorers or inventors or actors or anything else, it's sometimes very easy to think of them as out there, somewhere above and beyond us. I want all of you to realize that they're just like you and me, that we too can aspire to greatness. Anyone in this room can be a scientist, or an astronaut, or anything they want to be, if they work hard and are determined. Mr. Jason looked directly at me when he said that, the familiar look of contempt on his face. What was it about me that rubbed him up the wrong way? Was it just my colour he despised so much? I couldn't help being white any more than he could help being black. I mean, he wasn't even that black anyway. He was more beige than brown, and a very light beige at that, so he had nothing to gloat about. I smiled secretly to myself as I remembered the saying Dad was always spouting. If you're black, that's where it's at. If you're brown, stick around. If you're white, say goodnight. When you got right down to it, Mr. Jason had less cause to look down on me than Mrs. Paxton, who was dark, dark brown, but she was totally different. She treated me like a real person. She didn't see me as just a colour, first, last and always. I liked her. She was like an oasis in this scorching hot desert. Now then, can anyone tell me who invented automatic traffic signals, which led to the traffic lights we use today? And he also invented a type of gas mask used by soldiers during World War I. Everyone sat silent. Slowly, I put my hand up. Mr. Jason saw my hand, but looked around for someone else to ask. Everyone else's hand stayed down. Yes, Callum, Mr. Jason asked reluctantly. Garrett Morgan, sir. Correct. What about this one, class? Who pioneered blood banks? Once again, no hands went up, except mine. Yes, Callum. Mr. Jason's voice was now tinged with sarcasm. Dr. Charles Drew, I replied. And I suppose you also know who was the first person to perform open heart surgery. Dr. Daniel Hale Williams? The first man to reach the North Pole? Matthew Henson? All eyes were upon me now. Mr. Jason gave me one of the filthiest looks I've ever had in my life. The saying, the real McCoy, is named after Elijah J. McCoy, I replied. Mr. Jason drew himself up to his full height. Why don't I just sit down and you can teach this lesson? What did he want from me? He was asking questions that I knew the answers to. Was I supposed to just sit there and pretend to be ignorant? Can anyone tell me what all these scientists and pioneers really had in common? Mr. Jason asked. A few more hands went up at that. Mr. Jason wasn't the only one who was relieved. Not that I was going to answer any more questions anyway. Yes, Harriet, said Mr. Jason. They're all men, Harriet replied. Our examples are, but there have been plenty of women pioneers and scientists and achievers as well, Mr. Jason smiled. So, can anyone tell me what else all the people mentioned have in common? There were a couple more guesses after that, like, they're all dead, they all won the Nobel Prize, they all made a lot of money from what they did. But none of them was right. And it was so obvious. At last, I couldn't stand it any longer. My hand crept up. Ah, I wondered if we were going to hear from you again. Mr. Jason directed more of a smirk than a smile in my direction. So, what's the answer then, Callum? They were all crosses, I replied. Mr. Jason's smirk grew so wide I'm surprised he didn't swallow his ears. Correct. Well done. He started moving round the class. My face burned pink, then scarlet, as every eye in the class turned on me. Throughout history, from the time our ancestors in Kafreek sailed to other lands and acquired knowledge of gunpowder, writing, weapon-making, the arts, and so on, we have been the dominant race on Earth. We have been the explorers, the ones to move entire backward civilizations onwards. I couldn't let him get away with that. My hand shot up again. Yes, Callum.
Sir, I read somewhere that noughts have made a significant contribution to the way we live today too.
Oh, yes. Like how? Mr. Jason folded his arms across his chest as he waited for my answer.
Well, for example, Matthew Henson was joint first to the North Pole. Robert E. Peary was with him.
Robert who?
Robert Peary. He was co-discoverer of the geographic North Pole.
How come I've never heard of him then? Mr. Jason challenged.
Because all the history books are written by crosses, and you never write about anyone else except your own. Noughts have done lots of significant things, but I bet no one in this class knows.
That's quite enough, Mr. Jason cut me off in mid-tirade.
But, sir, how dare you spread these pathetic lies about Noughts scientists and inventors?
Mr. Jason's hands were clenched at his sides now, and he glared at me furiously.
They're not lies, I protested. Who's been filling your head with all this nonsense? It's not nonsense. My dad told me.
And where did your dad get it from?
I...
My voice trailed away.
Exactly, said Mr. Jason. Now go and stand outside the headmaster's room, and don't come back into this room until you've got all that nonsense out of your head and you're ready to accept my teaching.
I grabbed my bag and jumped to my feet, knocking my chair over in the process. I turned and glared at Seffi. Her gaze dropped away from mine almost at once. Not bothering to pick up my chair, I slammed out of the room. I knew that little act of defiance would probably get me in even more trouble. But as I marched down the corridor towards Mr. Costa's room, I was so livid I was shaking.
It wasn't nonsense. It wasn't lies. It was the truth.
Centuries ago, crosses had moved across northern and eastern Pangaea from the south, acquiring along the way the know-how to make the guns and weapons that made everyone else bow down to them. But that didn't mean that what they did was right. We Noughts had been their slaves for so long, and even though slavery had been formally abolished over half a century ago, I didn't see that we were much better off. We were only just beginning to be let into their schools. The number of noughts in positions of authority in the country could be counted on the fingers of one hand, without including the thumb. It wasn't right. It wasn't fair. And though I knew that nowhere was it written that life was meant to be fair, it still made my blood bubble to think about it. Why should I feel grateful to any of them just because they'd let me into one of their precious schools? What was the point? Maybe Mum and Jude were right. Maybe this was a complete waste of my time. My steps slowed as I approached the school secretary's room. Was I meant to stand in the corridor or go into the secretary's office and wait outside the headmaster's door? After dithering about for a few moments, I decided that Mr. Jason probably wanted me to stand where I could get into the maximum amount of trouble. That meant standing right outside Mr. Costa's door. I peered in through the glass in the secretary's door. She wasn't there. That was something at any rate. I went in, carefully shutting the door behind me. I reckoned I'd slammed enough doors that morning. I'd taken two steps into the office when quiet but angry voices floated out past Mr. Costa's slightly ajar door to meet me. "And I'm telling you that something needs to be done." It was Mrs. Paxton's voice. "How much longer are you going to let this situation continue? If the Blankers are finding it tough here, then maybe they should go elsewhere," came Mr. Costa's reply. I froze, not even breathing, as I waited to hear what was said next. "Mr. Costa, the Noughts,"
Mrs. Paxton stressed the word, are being constantly picked on. It's only a matter of time before one of them retaliates.
Not in my school, they won't, Mr. Costa snapped back. All I'm saying is, it's up to us to lead from the front. If we teachers make it clear that such behaviour won't be tolerated, then our students will have to follow our example.
Mrs. Paxton, are you really that naive?
Noughts are treated in this school exactly the same way as they're treated outside.
Then it's up to us to make this school a haven, a sanctuary for crosses and noughts. A place where we provide equality of education, equality of opportunity, and equality of treatment.
Oh, really?
You're making mountains out of gnat bites, Mr. Costa dismissed. Better to overestimate the problems than ignore them altogether.
Mrs. Paxton was annoyed and making no attempts to hide it.
Enough! No one wanted them here in the first place.
I did, Mrs. Paxton shot back. And so did some of the other teachers, and the government, and...
The government did as the Pangean Economic Community ordered. They were afraid of sanctions, and that was the only reason they did it.
The reason doesn't matter. The point is, they did it.
We'll reap what we sow, you mark my words. The noughts are here now, and if we don't act soon, this whole scheme will fail.
Pause.
Or is that the point?
Mrs. Paxton was fighting a losing battle, and she didn't even know it. I couldn't bear to listen to any more. I turned and tiptoed out, careful to shut the door behind me without making a sound. Less than a minute later, Mrs. Paxton came striding out of the secretary's office. She stopped abruptly when she saw me.
Callum, what are you doing out here?
Mrs. Paxton frowned.
Callum?
Mr. Jason sent me out of his class, miss.
Why?
I bit my lip. My gaze dropped away from hers.
Why, Callum?
We had an argument. Mrs. Paxton waited for me to continue. About history.
Oh, yes. It's not fair, Mrs. Paxton. I've read thousands of history books, and not one of them mentions us noughts, except to say how the crosses fought against us and won. I thought history was supposed to be the truth.
Ah, Mrs. Paxton nodded. And you expressed your views to Mr. Jason?
I nodded.
I see. Callum, sometimes it's better to leave certain things unsaid.
But that's what everyone does.
Nearly everyone does, I amended. And things that go unsaid soon get forgotten.
That's why us noughts aren't in any of the history books. And we never will be unless we write them ourselves.
Mr. Jason didn't like it when I said that us noughts have done things too.
But then, Mr. Jason doesn't like anything I do or say. He hates me.
Nonsense. Mr. Jason just doesn't want to see you fail. And being hard on you is his way of trying to...
Mrs. Paxton sought for the appropriate thing to say.
To toughen you up.
Yeah, right. I didn't even try to keep the derisive scepticism out of my voice.
Mrs. Paxton placed a hand under my chin to raise my head so that I had to look directly at her.
Callum, a change of policy at this school and all schools was long overdue.
Believe me, Mr. Jason doesn't want to see you fail any more than I do.
We don't want to see any of the noughts fail.
And he told you this, did he?
Mrs. Paxton's hand dropped to her side.
He didn't have to.
Yeah, right, I dismissed immediately.
Mrs. Paxton looked thoughtful for a few moments.
Callum, I'm going to tell you something in the strictest confidence. I'm going to trust you. Do you understand?
I didn't, but I nodded anyway.
Mr. Jason isn't against you. And do you know why?
No.
Because his mother was a naught.
Chapter 31. treat me like this, Kamar. I won't stand for it.
Then go and have another bottle or eight of wine. That's about all you're good for these days.
I winced at Dad's tone of voice, so utterly contemptuous, and he made no attempt to hide or disguise it. Minnie sat on the stair above mine as we listened to one of our parents' rare arguments. Rare because Dad was never at home. Rare because on the very few occasions that Dad was home, Mother was usually too out of it to notice or too refined to start an argument. We'd just finished our dinner in the family room, and both Minnie and I had been sent upstairs by Mother to do our homework. That alone was enough to tip us off that something was going on. Mother never told us to do our homework unless she wanted to get us out of the way.
"So you're not even going to deny it?"
Mother asked.
"Why should I? It's about time you and I face the truth. Past time, in fact."
"Kamal, what have I done to deserve this? I've always been a good wife to you, a good mother to our children."
"Oh, yes,"
Dad agreed, and if possible, his tone grew even more sneering.
"You've been an excellent mother to all my children."
I turned to give my sister a puzzled look. She was looking straight ahead. What did Dad mean by that?
"I did my best."
Mother sounded like she was starting to cry.
"Your best? Your best isn't up to much."
"Was I supposed to let you bring your bastard into our house?"
Mother shouted.
"Oh, no. The great Jasmine Ada Yabi Hadley bring up her husband's child as her own? That would never do. I mean, God forbid that you should chip a nail or dirty one of your designer gowns looking after my son."
"I should have let you bring your son into our house. I know that now," Mother said. "But when you told me, I was hurt. I made a mistake."
"So did I when I married you,"
Dad shot back.
"You wanted to punish me for my son who was born before you and I ever met, and that's what you spent years doing. Don't blame me if I finally decided enough is enough."
Dad had a son. Minnie and I had a brother. I turned to my sister. She was looking at me, her eyes narrowed. We had a brother.
"Kamal, I was hoping that maybe we could start again,"
Mother began hesitantly.
"Just you and me. We could go away somewhere and..."
"Oh, Jasmine, don't be ridiculous," Dad interrupted. "It's over. Just accept the fact. Besides, look at you. You've really let yourself go."
I gasped at that, and I wasn't the only one.
"You're a cruel man,"
Mother cried.
"And you're a drunk,"
said Dad.
"And worse than that, you're a boring drunk."
Minnie stood up and headed upstairs. I didn't blame her. I knew I should do the same. Stop listening. Walk away. Just go before I ended up hating both my parents. But I stayed put. Like a fool, I stayed put.
"If it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be Deputy Prime Minister. You would be nowhere."
Mother's voice trembled as she spoke.
"Oh, please. Don't pretend you did it for me, because we both know that you did it for yourself, then the kids, then our neighbours and your friends. What I wanted, what I needed, came a long way down your list."
"I didn't hear you protest when my parties got you known by all the right people, started you moving in all the right circles."
"No, I didn't complain,"
Dad admitted.
"But you got just as much out of it as I did."
"And now you're going to walk out on me and your children for that. That."
Mother's voice dripped with bitterness.
"Her name is Grace,"
Dad interrupted harshly.
"And I'm not walking out on you now. I left a long time ago. You just refuse to believe it. You and the children will get everything you need. You'll be well provided for. And I want regular access to my girls. I love them too much to let you poison their minds against me. But after the next election, I'm going to make it officially known that you and I are no longer together."
"You won't get away with this. I'll divorce you,"
Mother threatened.
"I'll tell all the newspapers." "You'll divorce me?"
Dad actually laughed. I flinched, sticking my fingers in my ears. only to take them out again at once. Jasmine, the day you divorce me will be the happiest day of my life. You can't afford the scandal of a divorce in your position, a position I helped you to get. If I had a penny for every time you've said that, I'd be the richest man on the planet, Dad replied. Dad's footsteps sounded on the parquet floor. I jumped to my feet and darted upstairs, not stopping until I'd reached my bedroom. I leaned against the door and closed my eyes. I didn't cry. I wasn't even close to crying. I grabbed my jacket from over my chair and ran downstairs, heading out of the door before anyone could stop me. I needed to clear my head, and our house wasn't the place to do it. I ran and ran, through the rose garden, across the wasteland, towards the beach. Maybe if I ran fast enough, my thoughts would click into some sort of order. Dad had found someone else. He was leaving. And I had an older brother, older than Minnie. Nothing in my life was a fact. There was nothing to cling on to, nothing to anchor myself to. I just whirled around and around and... Callum. Callum was already there, in our place, in our space. I ran along the beach the moment I saw him and plonked myself down beside him. Callum put his arm around my shoulders. We sat in silence whilst I tried to straighten out my thoughts. I looked at his face, which was in profile, but I could see enough to realise there was something bothering him, something that was making him sad. "I'm sorry about Mr. Jason," I said at last. "I finally got what you were talking about in today's lesson."
"Don't apologise for him," Callum frowned. "It's not your place to apologise for every moronic cretin in the world." "Only the moronic cross cretins," I asked with a brief smile. "Not even those," Callum smiled back. "I'll tell you what. You don't apologise for every cross who's an idiot, and I won't apologise for every naught who's the same. Agreed?"
"It's a deal." Callum and I shook hands. "Come on. Best to get it over with," I told myself. Taking a deep breath, I said, "Callum, I've got a confession to make about my birthday party." He became very still the moment the words left my mouth. "Oh, yes?" he prompted, his arm dropping away from my shoulders. "It's just that I wanted you there, but for mostly the wrong reasons."
"Which were?"
"I wanted to upset my mum and my so-called friends," I told him. "I wanted to hit back at all of them."
"I see."
"No, you don't," I said. "I'm telling you now because I'm taking back my invite."
"Why?"
Because, I said, hoping Callum would get my ridiculous attempt at an explanation. He secret smiled at me, saying dryly,
"Thank you."
"You're welcome. We'll do something else for my birthday, okay?"
"Okay."
"Growing up is hard work," I sighed again.
"And it's going to get harder,"
Callum warned, his voice suddenly grim. I looked at him and opened my mouth to ask what he meant. But I closed my mouth without saying a word. I was too afraid of the answer.
Chapter 32. It was late at night, past 11, as I lay on top of my bed, trying to make sense of what Mrs. Paxton had told me. Mr. Jason's mother was a naught. I was missing something somewhere. Mrs. Paxton had been so sure that Mr. Jason was on my side, and yet every time he looked at me, he hated me. I was sure of it. I was almost sure of it. Maybe I was just being paranoid. Maybe I was just being a coward, assuming that every cross was my enemy so that if it turned out to be the case, I could say, "I told you so." But Mrs. Paxton wasn't my enemy. And Seffy certainly wasn't. I rubbed my hands over my forehead. My thoughts were spinning round so much they were giving me a splitting headache. I wasn't sure of anything anymore. Someone knocked on my door. I sat up.
"Who is it?"
"Linny," said my sister. "Can I come in?"
"Course."
Linny came into the room, quietly shutting the door behind her.
"You okay?" I asked.
"No." Linny shook her head.
"You?"
"The same. But I'll survive." Linny gave me a strange look at that.
But then she smiled and the peculiar expression on her face vanished without a trace. Since Linny and Jude's fight, neither of them had spoken to the other, not one word. My sister sat down at the foot of my bed. She started picking at the loose threads on my duvet cover. I wasn't sure what to say, so I said nothing. How's school?
It's okay. I'm learning a lot.
And wasn't that the truth? Linny must have picked up on my tone of voice because she looked up and smiled dryly. Tough going, huh? The toughest. Reckon you'll stick with it? I'm in now. Wild horses couldn't drag me out, I said belligerently. Linny smiled, her face full of admiration.
How do you do it, Callum?
Do what?
Keep going.
I shrugged. I don't know.
Yes, you do, Linny challenged, which kind of made me start.
I smiled at her total conviction that I knew what I was doing.
I guess I keep going because I know what I want.
Which is
to be someone, to make a difference.
Linny looked at me and frowned.
What if you can't do both?
Huh?
If you can only have one.
Which one means more to you?
Being someone or making a difference?
My smile was broad as I looked at her. I couldn't help it.
What's so funny? Linny asked.
Nothing. It's just that you and me, talking like this, it reminds me of the old days, I told her. We used to have debates about anything and everything. I've missed our talks.
Linny smiled back at me, her smile waning as she said,
You haven't answered my question, and don't try to wriggle out of it.
Which one means more? Being someone or making a difference?
I don't know. Being someone, I guess. Having a large house and money in the bank and not having to work and being respected wherever I go. When I'm educated and I've got my own business, there won't be a single person in the world who'll be able to look down on me, nor Orcross.
Linny considered me carefully. Being someone, eh? I would have put money on you choosing the other one.
Well, what's the point of making a difference if you've got nothing to show for it, if there's not even any money in it? I asked.
Linny shrugged. She had a strange expression on her face, like she was sad for me.
What about you?
What keeps you going? I asked.
Lynette smiled, a strange, mysterious smile, as her thoughts turned in on themselves and I was totally excluded.
Linny? I prompted, uncertainly.
My sister stood up and headed for the door. I thought that was the end of the conversation, but she turned to me just before she left the room.
Do you want to know what kept me going, Cal? Linny sighed.
Being bonkers. I miss being insane.
Linny, don't say that. I leapt up.
You were never insane.
No?
Then why do I feel so empty now?
I know I was living in a fantasy world before, but at least
I was somewhere.
Now I'm nowhere.
That's not true, isn't it?
Linny, you are all right, aren't you?
But even as I asked the question, I knew the answer.
I'm fine. I just need to sort myself out, Linny sighed deeply.
Callum, doesn't any of this ever strike you as pointless?
What do you mean?
Just what I said.
Being here.
It works from the Crosses' point of view.
But what about our own?
Because if this is all there is, we might as well be robots. We might as well not exist at all.
Things will get better, Linny, I tried.
Do you really believe that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm at Heathcroft High, aren't I? A few years ago, that would have been impossible, unthinkable.
But none of their universities will take you.
I shook my head. You don't know that. By the time I'm ready to leave school, they might.
And then what?
I'll get a good job, and I'll be on my way up.
Doing what?
My frown deepened as I glared at my sister.
You sound just like Mum. Sorry, I didn't mean to. Linny turned around to leave the room. Just remember, Callum, she said, her back towards me, when you're floating up and up in your bubble, that bubbles have a habit of bursting. The higher you climb, the further you have to fall. Lynette left the room without bothering to shut my door. I stood up and walked over to do it myself, still annoyed with her. Of all people, my sister should not just understand my dreams, but cheer them. Let down didn't even begin to describe how I felt. I was just about to slam my door shut when I caught sight of Linny's face as she closed her own bedroom door behind her. She was hurting inside. Hurting badly and close to tears. I stepped out onto the landing, wincing as my bare feet struck a nail not flush with the graying, warped floorboards. By the time I'd rubbed my toe and looked up again, Linny had gone.
Chapter 33 Minnie, can I come in?
If you must, my sister said grudgingly.
I walked into her room, only to stop short when I saw my sister's face. She'd been crying. I'd never seen my sister cry before, ever. Minnie, are you...
I didn't finish my question. I already knew the answer, and besides, asking it would only have cheesed her off.
How many times do I have to tell you not to call me Minnie?
My sister snapped. My name is Minerva.
M-I-N-E-R-V-A. Minerva.
Yes, Minnie, I said. Minnie looked at me and smiled reluctantly. What do you want, Frogface? She asked. I sat down on the chair in front of her dressing table. I think Mother and Dad are going to get a divorce. That won't happen, said Minnie.
How can you be so sure?
'Cause Dad's been threatening Mother with a divorce for years, and it hasn't happened yet. Minnie shrugged.
I thought for a moment. But it was Mother who threatened it this time, not Dad.
Minnie's head snapped up at that. She stared at me.
Do you think they might then? I whispered.
Minnie shrugged and looked away again.
And what about our brother? I asked.
He's not our brother. He's just our dad's son. Minnie stood up and walked over to her window. And what about him?
How do we find him?
We don't. Minnie looked at me like I'd lost my marbles.
But don't you want to know who he is? What he looks like? Aren't you curious?
Of course not. I wasn't curious about him 3 years ago when I found out about him, so why should I be curious now?
3 years ago? I said aghast. You knew we had a brother 3 years ago. Why didn't you tell me?
Why would I do that? Minnie frowned. What good would that have done? Dad had a fling before he met Mother and had a son. That's all I know or want to know.
I stared at my sister. It was like we were having two different conversations. She couldn't see my point of view, and I certainly couldn't see hers. Minnie, don't you even want to know our brother's name?
Stop calling him our brother, and no, I don't.
Well, I do. I'm going to ask Dad, and Minnie flew across the room and pulled me off my chair in about 2 seconds flat. You'll do no such thing, do you hear? But Minnie, how do you think Mother would feel if you started asking about Dad's son? She's unhappy enough without you making it worse.
Okay, okay. Minnie let go of my arms. I immediately rubbed them to try to get the circulation going again.
Is that why she's so unhappy? Because of Dad's son? I asked.
Minnie regarded me, considering her answer very carefully before she spoke. That's part of the reason.
And the other part?
She had an affair a while ago and...
Mother! My eyes were opened so wide they must surely plop onto my cheeks. Mother had an affair?
Don't sound so surprised. Minnie smiled at my expression. I think she only did it to make Dad sit up and take a bit more notice.
Did it work?
What do you think? Minnie said scornfully. If anything, it drove them further apart, and then Mum felt even more alone.
She hasn't got any friends, you know.
What are you talking about? She's got friends dripping out of cupboards, I scoffed. Not close ones. Not real friends that she can tell anything and everything to.
She's probably driven them all away with her funny moods, I sniffed. One moment she's pushing me away or acting as if I don't exist, and the next she wants to know about every minute of my day. If I didn't have to live in the same house as her, I wouldn't put up with her either. She's lonely, said Minnie. Why doesn't she just go out and make some new friends then? I asked. Minnie smiled, one of her superior smiles that instantly ruffled my feathers. You're very young, Seffy. Don't be patronizing, I fumed. I'm not. I'm just stating a fact. And do you know what I wish for you? What? I asked, expecting something unpleasant. That you never grow older.
Chapter 34. Well, Callum, this is it. Are you going to do it or not? Are you going to stand up for yourself? You've had more than half a term of this crap. Speak, say something. Don't be such a wimp. Do it. Excuse me, Mr. Jason. May I have a word with you? As long as it's a short, fast word, Mr. Jason replied, without bothering to look up from fastening his bag. I looked around, waiting for the last person to leave the classroom. Well, Mr. Jason snapped as he headed for the door. Why did I get a C minus for my midterm grade, when I got 27 marks out of 30 in your last test and came first? Your grade reflects other things besides how well you did in the test. Like what? Like your coursework and homework to date, not to mention your attitude. I've never got less than 9 out of 10 for my homework. Mr. Jason stopped in his tracks just beside the door. I finally had his full attention. Are you questioning my judgment? Because that's exactly what I mean when I say your attitude leaves a lot to be desired. I'd just like to know your reasons, that's all. I gave you the grade you deserved, no more, no less. Adoti got a B, when my work so far this term has been getting better marks than his, and I got 5 more in the test. If you don't like the way I've graded you, you can always appeal, Mr. Jason challenged. But I was ready for that one. Okay, I will. I went to move past him, but he slammed the door shut before I could leave. I see you've chosen this particular time to make a fool of yourself, McGregor. Your grade will not be altered. I can promise you that. I regarded him, Mrs. Paxton's words still ringing in my ears. Why do you hate me so much? My words tumbled out in angry frustration. If anything, you should be on my side. Mr. Jason drew himself up to his full height, his eyes giving me frostbite. What are you talking about, boy? You're half naught, so I don't understand. Mr. Jason's bag dropped to the floor, forgotten. He gripped my shoulders and started shaking me. Who told you that? That lie! No one. I just thought. You're lighter than Mrs. Paxton and all the others, so I just thought. Mr. Jason released me as suddenly as he grabbed me. How dare you? How dare you? Who else have you said this to? No one. No one. I swear. Every time I look at you, I thank God I'm not one of you. Do you hear me? I thank God. Yes, sir. Mr. Jason picked up his bag and marched out of the classroom. I didn't realize it until he was out of sight, but I was shaking. Actually, physically shaking. But at least that question was answered.
Chapter 35. Mr. Jason strode down the corridor with a face like a cold rice pudding. The man was seriously ticked off. I only noticed because I was looking at the faces of every male that passed me, wondering if this boy looked like my brother, or if that boy had the same eyes, the same nose, the same mouth as my brother. I've been at it all day. I've been at it ever since I'd heard I had a brother. My brother. I turned the corner and saw Callum standing in the doorway of our classroom. I was ready to tell him my news now. Quickly checking up and down the corridor to make sure we were alone, I said, "Callum, guess what? You'll never believe what I found out from eavesdropping on Mother and Dad. Not now, Seffi. But Callum, this is important. Seffi, I said not now. Can't you think of anyone else but yourself for a change? Callum snapped. And he strode off, in the opposite direction to Mr. Jason. But not before I realised that the expression on his face mirrored that of Mr. Jason. Exactly.
Chapter 36. We were all sitting down for dinner, and not one of us spoke. No one had anything to say. Linny kept her head bowed and concentrated on her plate of sausages and chips. Jude had the same sour, sullen look on his face that he'd worn since he and Linny had had their fight. Dad's face was sad. Mum threw down her knife and fork, the clatter making us all jump. "Goodness me! What's the matter with everyone?" "Meggie. Don't Meggie me," Mum frowned at Dad. "There's been a funny atmosphere in this house for a while now. What's going on?" "I'm going for a walk." Linny sprang out of her chair. "Linny?" Mum wasn't the only one who was surprised. This was the first time Linny had shown the slightest interest in leaving the house by herself since I don't know when. "It's okay, Mum. I'll only be gone for a little while." "Where are you going?" asked Mum. Linny smiled gently. "Mum, I'm a big girl now. Stop worrying." "Want some company?" I asked. Linny shook her head. She turned abruptly and headed upstairs. "I thought you were going for a walk," Mum called after her. "I want to do something first," Linny called back. I carried on eating my dinner for the want of something better to do. "I'm going now. I'll see you all later," said Linny when she finally came downstairs again. And she grabbed her wraparound jacket and headed out of the door, with all of us watching her. Linny turned round. Mum half stood up, but then she sat down again, never taking her eyes off my sister. "Bye, everyone." Linny smiled softly, the saddest, loneliest smile I've ever seen. And then she shut the door behind her and was gone. "Ryan, I want to know exactly what's going on, and don't say it's nothing. That won't work this time. One of you had better start talking, and fast." Jude lowered his head. I looked at Jude. Dad looked at Mum. "Meggie, it was when you last went to visit your sister," Dad said at last. "I'm listening," Mum prompted somberly. And as Dad told her exactly what had happened, we waited for the storm to hit. Mum sat glaring at each of us in turn. I knew she was still doing it, even though I didn't dare look at her. After a lot of shouting, she'd spent the last 3 and whatever hours staring and glaring and scowling, until I don't know about the others, but I felt like a withered worm twisting for her contemptuous inspection. "Ryan, where's my daughter?" asked Mum for the umpteenth time. Dad didn't answer. He couldn't. He just continued to hang his head. "Jude and Lynette fighting. Ryan, I can't believe you let it happen. You are the most ineffectual, useless man it's ever been my misfortune to come across," Mum said with deep reproach. "It's not Dad's fault, Mum," Jude tried. "And you can shut right up." Mum turned on him like a cornered rat. "I'm sick to the back teeth of this belief you have, that you and your opinions are always right and everyone else is wrong. You've been picking on your sister and goading her for months now." "Well, you've been doing the same to me, so that makes us about even," Jude shot back bitterly. "I've been picking on you, as you call it, because you're not doing anything with your life. You could work with your dad in the lumberyard, or do an apprenticeship with old man Tony, but old man Tony has always bombed off his trolley. Light a match in front of his mouth and the old street would go up in flames. And I don't want to work in his ruddy bakery," Jude shouted. "If I get into that, I'll never get out again. I'll be covered with flour and baking bread till the day I die. It's an honest job. I don't want an honest job." "You don't know what you want," Mum dismissed with a snort. "Yes, I do. I want to go to school." The words came out in a rush. I stared at Jude. Since when had he wanted to go back to school?
He'd always scorned me for having my nose in book after book. When I'd been studying for the Heathcroft High Entrance exam, every word, every syllable he directed my way had dripped with sarcasm and contempt. "Jude, we've been through this before," Mum sighed, her impatience. "We didn't have the money to keep you in school. I lost my job, remember?" "But you found the money for Callum to go to school," said Jude. "Every bit of care and attention in this house goes to Lynette and Callum. When is it my turn?" "Boy, stop talking nonsense," Mum snapped. "You're our son and we love you, just the same as the others. But at this precise moment, I don't like any of you very much. Then I won't inflict my presence on you any longer." Jude sprang to his feet and headed for the front door. "Jude!" Mum was also on her feet and moving forward. Jude threw open the front door, but was halted in his tracks by the presence of two police officers, framed by the darkness outside him. One of the officers had his arm raised, ready to knock on the door. They seemed as startled to see us as we were to see them. The officer in front was obviously the one in charge. A police sergeant, I think he was. A thin, reedy man whose uniform looked at least a size too big for him. The constable was almost the exact opposite. He was built like a brick outhouse. What he lacked in height, he made up for in width. Both of them were crosses, of course. Naught police officers were as rare as blue snow. "Mr. McGregor?" The senior police officer looked around the room. Dad stood up slowly. "Lynette," Mum whispered. Her trembling hand blindly sought and found the back of the sofa, her eyes never leaving the officers. "May we come in?" Dad's nod was brief. "Please." They stepped into our living room, carefully shutting the door behind them. "I'm Sergeant Collins, and this is Constable Dark Eagle," said the senior policeman. "Officers?" Dad prompted when no one in the room spoke. We were all wound so tautly that platitudes just made our torture worse. "I'm so sorry, sir. Mom, I'm afraid I've got some bad news." The officers had pitying, embarrassed looks on their faces. Dad swallowed hard, his expression carved in granite. "What happened?" he asked quietly. Mum's grip on the sofa tightened, her knuckles whitening. I stared at the officers, telling myself that no matter what they said, it wouldn't, it couldn't be as bad as the thoughts racing through my head. But it was. "You have a daughter called Lynette McGregor?" Dad nodded. "I'm terribly sorry, sir, but there's been an accident. A tragic accident. I'm afraid she walked right into the path of an oncoming bus. Witnesses said she seemed to be in a world of her own. Maybe she had things on her mind." No one answered his question. I don't think he expected an answer, because he went on almost immediately. "It was no one's fault. If it's any consolation, she was killed instantly. She didn't suffer. I'm so sorry." No one spoke. I kept my eyes on the officer, the bearer of the bad news. I couldn't have looked at any other member of my family then if my life had depended on it. It was all my fault. That's how it felt. I remembered her staring at herself in the cracked living room mirror, her hands bloody where she'd cut herself on the rough glass. Only a few days ago. Only a lifetime ago. "Lynette. Your daughter is in the morgue of the local hospital, if you wish to see her." No! Mum let out a sudden howl like a wounded animal and sunk to her knees. Dad was at her side at once. Jude took a step forward and then stopped. The two police officers looked away, unwilling to be spectators at Mum's grief. I stood like a statue, frozen and mute. The seconds ticked past. Dad hugged Mum to him, rocking her. Mum didn't speak and she didn't cry. She didn't make another sound. Her eyes were closed as she let Dad rock her. Sergeant Collins stepped forward, a card in his hand. This is my number. If you need anything, anything at all, just phone me. I've written the number of a bereavement service on the back of the card, in case you want to use it. Dad took the card. That's very kind of you, officer. Thank you. His voice shook as he took the card. I'm so sorry, Sergeant Collins said one more time, before ushering the constable out of the front door. At the click of the closing door, I sank down onto the sofa. Lynette entered my head and filled my thoughts and spun around me and danced through me until it felt like she was swallowing me up. Jude stood quite still, looking utterly lost. Mum opened her eyes slowly. She pulled herself away from Dad, who reluctantly let her go, before turning to face us. A solitary tear trickled down her cheek. You must all be so proud of yourselves, she said. I hope you're happy now. Maggie, that's not fair, Dad began. The officer said it was an accident. Mum looked at each of us in turn. Was it? Or did she have her mind on what you all said to her? Then Mum buried her head in her hands, murmuring, my baby, my baby. And we could do nothing but stand and watch, all of us together, each of us utterly alone.
Chapter 37. I flicked from channel to channel to channel, searching for something to watch, looking for something to occupy my time. Nothing on that channel, nothing on that channel either. For goodness sake! Minnie snatched the remote control out of my hand and threw it across the room. What's biting you? I asked. Doesn't anything ever bother you? Minnie asked, shaking her head. Lots of things bother me, I frowned. But nothing that you actually lose any sleep over, eh? What are you talking about? Mother and Dad are splitting up. It's actually going to happen. Doesn't that mean anything to you? It means a lot to me, I protested. Dad's got someone else. Mother's drowning her sorrows even worse than before, and you lash out at me all the time because I'm an easy target. But there's not a single thing I can do about any of it, is there? Minnie gave me a look that would have felled a giant redwood before she marched out of the room. I stood up and hunted for the remote. I mean, geez, was it my fault? What did she want from me, for goodness sake? If I could have done something about Mother and Dad, then I would have. But one person, especially someone like me, never made a difference to a ruddy thing. At last, I found the remote and sat back down on the sofa, growing more angry with each passing second. Minnie drove me nuts with her constant moods and her sulky behaviour. In fact, if she thought, Steffi, phone for an ambulance, quick! I've never moved so fast in my life. I took the stairs two and three at a time, following the sound of Minnie's voice. I ran into Minnie's bedroom, but it was empty. I dashed into Mother's bedroom across the landing and stopped suddenly, like I'd hit an invisible brick wall. Mum was slumped on the floor, a tablet bottle by her side with a few scattered pills on the carpet. A very few pills. Minnie cradled Mum's head on her lap, frantically stroking her hair and calling her name. An ambulance! Now! Minnie screamed at me. I ran along the landing to the phone, shock freezing my eyes wide open. Mother had tried to kill herself. My mother had tried to kill herself.
Chapter 38. There was something wrong with me. I didn't cry. I couldn't. I sat on my bed and I stared into nothing, and I couldn't cry. I lay on my back with my hands behind my head, and nothing. I lay on my stomach, burying my face into my pillow, waiting for the tears to start. But they didn't. My sister was dead, and I couldn't feel a thing. My head still buried in my pillow. I clenched my fists and stuck them under it so I wouldn't do something silly like punch the wall or the headboard. My fingers brushed against something cold and smooth. I sat up and lifted up my pillow. There was an envelope with Callum written on it in my sister's neat, tiny writing. Shock, hot and electric, shot through me. I picked it up. The letter dropped to the floor. I stared down at it, unable to believe my eyes. "Linny," I whispered, confused. I looked around, expecting to see her standing in my bedroom doorway, smiling at me. "Gotcha!" all over her face. But the room was empty. What should I do? I bent down and picked up the letter between two trembling fingers. I was desperate to know what it said, but at the same time I was terrified. Count to three, and then do it. I got to two, then tore open the letter, my heart hammering. I began to read. "Dear Callum, this is a very hard letter to write, but I wanted you of all people to know the truth. By now, if I'm very lucky and God is very good, I won't be around any more. I'm tired, and I want out. It's as simple as that. I've tried to think of the best way to do this, and I think walking in front of a bus or a tram or a train is the easiest. A car is too hit and miss. See? My sense of humour has come back along with my sanity. The return of my sanity I can stand. It's the return to reality that I can't cope with. I'll try to make it look like an accident, so that I don't shame Mum and Dad, but I wanted you to know the truth. I'm not ashamed of who I am anymore, but I don't want to live in a world where what I am isn't good enough, where nothing I do will ever be good enough, because I'm a naught, and I always will be, and nothing will ever change that. I hope you and Seffi have more luck than Jed and me, if that's what you want. Take care of yourself, and whatever life throws at you, be strong. Be strong for both of us. All my love, Lynette." "Linny." I stared down at the letter in my hand. The words blurred and swam before me. I didn't have to read it a second or a third time. Once was more than enough. Crumpling the letter in my hand, I squeezed it smaller and smaller. I squeezed it like my heart was being squeezed. I sat perfectly still for a minute, an hour, I don't know how long. Long enough for the pain in my throat to subside. Long enough for my eyes to stop smarting. And only when I could trust myself not to hurt so much, only then did I move. I tore the letter into 100 pieces and let them fall to the floor like paper rain. For the first time in my life, I hated my sister, hated her. She'd given in. She'd given up on life and left me to live it for the both of us. All my love. Was that all love did for you? Made you give up and give in? Left you open to pain and hurt? If it was, I swore that nothing would ever make me do the same as her. Nothing.
Chapter 39. Minnie and I sat together, her arm around my shoulder. "Minerva?" Shh, Minnie whispered. Mother will be all right. You'll see. She'll be fine. I looked up and down the carpeted corridor. The place looked more like a hotel than a hospital. Did they really know what they were doing? And where was Mother? They'd only let us in the ambulance because Minnie had insisted and kept her hand in Mother's all the time.